Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fools. We've hijacked the CIA's orbital mind control laser to beam the pirate signal of protest directly into your frontal cortex and tell you that you are free. I'm here with Hugo, and just want to let everybody know that Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah.
How you doing there, Hugo?
Doing all right here. All the way from sunny Mexico City and, giving sometimes the outsider perspective and sometimes just a regular freedom-minded person, no matter where we are.
That's what we need. Regular perspective in a world gone mad.
Yeah. And sure, we've been feeling that
so
lately.
So much madness out there. Did you hear about the protests at the University of Missouri?
Well, I was...
I
was just hearing that a bit from you. We don't get those local news here in Mexico, but why don't you tell us tell me a bit more about that and the audience too.
Well, it started out as an attempt to do a public display. They called it a safe circle, or a safe space. And they went out on the grounds of University of Missouri, and they created this great big circle with a bunch of tents set out in the middle. And so, of course, news people were there with their cameras, and they caught on camera this one guy who was representing ESPN. He was also a student at the University of Missouri. And he was trying to get photographs and document the event. And they started pushing him away from the circle, covering his camera and telling him he couldn't be there. He was really, really reasonable with them, saying, look, your right to be here is the same amendment that gives me the right to document it, right? I'm a journalist. And so they were actually like pushing their bodies against him to force him backwards. And then his cameraman got around and ended up in the circle. And this professor of communications came up, and her picture is all over the news now for doing this. She covered his camera with her hand and called for muscle to get the guy out of there. She actually said, we need some muscle over here.
Which is just a code word for brute force, right?
Uh-huh. And what makes it so bizarre is that she is a professor of communications, and she had an honorary... membership in the journalism department, which they've now, I think, taken away from her.
Well, yeah.
This whole freedom of speech thing has been, for at least the last year, been a big issue in the news, and lots of split perspectives, really strong voices arguing for unfettered free speech. But the majority of voices are still saying that freedom of speech has to have limits and that it has problems. But the campuses are getting so insane with this. They're no platforming people just because they said something once in their past that was disagreeable. And
yeah.
It boils down to the right to offend, right? Do they have a right to be not offended? Which is kind of an impossible task.
Yes, it is. And I think people who would combat freedom of speech always bring up this false dichotomy that we either have order or we have freedom, and that I don't think that's true at all. People would say, if we let everybody speak their mind, whatever they want, of course there will be chaos, anarchy. They would say, but
yeah, there'll be anarchy. I know.
That's what they would say.
The news for the word anarchy, all you get are descriptions of these types of events, right?
Yeah,
it would be anarchy.
Mad Max type scenarios where people are eating each other over a gallon of fuel. Yeah. And they present these scenarios. These are just tactics to make you afraid or to scare you into giving up your liberties. Or at least consenting into giving up your liberties, even though they would have to use force. And by they, I mean, people who don't like liberty and would rather have tyrannical order. And but with liberty people, libertarians, however you want to call them, or call us, it's a deal with this issue has a lot to deal with to do with private property, and that's part of the problem is that there is so little of it. When these issues of freedom of speech come up, they're always related to some kind of university, semi-public university campus, or the street, or some other government-related space where freedom of speech is supposed to happen. And well, I don't know if the listenership is aware of this difference. You know, there's freedom of speech in your own home or in your own property, and there's the government. And there's only a problem when there's a government space or a semi-public space or public space involved.
Yeah, well, that's one of the big arguments against people trying to discuss freedom of speech in places like universities. They say, well, freedom of speech only applies to, you know, disallowing the government from blocking your speech. But the problem is that, you know, freedom of speech is meant to allow for brave, bold, new thinking. And especially in universities, that is the place where society is moved forward by, you know, people thinking outside of the box, saying things that may cause problems for our current understandings about society, but ultimately might contribute to the betterment of society. And the universities used to be a place for dangerous thinking, and that's one of the big values that they offer to society. So, you know, freedom of speech, the intention of why it's a good thing, isn't just to say that it's to allow you to protest against your government. It's actually intended to allow people to bring their ideas to society without being, you know, called a witch and, you know, or a heretic or something like that.
I would say probably the whole freedom of speech issue is concerned with these ideas, but rather the idea of a university where thought is thought to be universal. And, it used to be that the university, as you were saying, were the places to do that. And suddenly, there are supposed to be some kind of safe space where you're not to be offended. And I think that's really retrogressive.
People can be offended by anything. So, really, it's just like if you're going to open your mouth and say something now, you better have a lawyer standing next to you. That's it's gotten so crazy that I think the mainstream is actually taking this really seriously now. One of the interesting no platformings that happened not too long ago was Germaine Greer, so mother of feminism, one of the mothers of feminism, and you know, this is more social justice warriors than feminists who are.
I did read about
doing
this thing,
but,
though.
Yeah, she got no platformed because she won't consider Bruce Jenner to be a woman, right?
Yeah, and she said she would call her. What she said, as I remember reading it, is she would call her a feminine pronoun out of courtesy, but she didn't consider trans women to be women. That's what this
right.
woman. Can you say that name again? What was the name of the mother of feminism?
Caitlyn Jenner.
Like mother of dragons. That sounded.
Oh, Germaine Greer.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. So people got all outraged about that too, right?
Yeah, and her response was that she's not blocking anybody from discussing trans issues. She's just stating her opinion. And, you know, it's not like she's, you know, the world leader whose opinion is going to ban transitional surgeries for anyone or, you know, make it illegal to you know, call yourself a certain pronoun that doesn't make sense to her.
Yeah, she's not the queen of feminism.
She's going, this is insane. Yeah, all it is an opinion, and apparently we're not allowed to have opinions anymore.
Well, that's
it's the policing of the mind.
Yeah, that's using...
I find it funny that she started this, too.
Yeah,
it's really funny
that she did start this. And the thing is, it's really absurd to start using force against those who would offend you without force, which is the whole thing with getting the government involved in political correctness or getting the government involved in, you know, arresting people who offend you. That doesn't make any sense if you're, well, I'm a big believer on fighting fire with fire in a way. And, well, you know, self-defense is okay, But in this case, if offending anyone is fire, well, you know, just try to offend them back. That's the right way to go.
That's the proper response.
To bring the cops on those people, not to bring the law, which is force.
What do we tell children? Use your words.
Yeah, not your fists, right?
Yeah, the part of the conflict in that safe space event at Missouri was that I found most interesting was her calling for some muscle over here right now. The muscle that started to leave the circle to head in their direction was not the police. It wasn't the government. It was just a really bulky guy who's thinking, yeah, I can remove someone, right? So the volunteer of muscle, it doesn't have to be, you know, the government. And it got me thinking about how people outside of government frameworks form the same sort of hierarchies and bullying, right? You don't need the police in order to, you know, have people forcibly removed or impose your will upon them. You just need enough, you know, bulky bodyguards that will respond.
Yeah, that's true. And that's something that even libertarians, you know, it's sort of a blind spot for libertarians. I've been accused of that here in Mexico sometimes by, you know, really, really right-wing people who would talk a lot about security. And they would say, you know, what about private criminals? My response to that would be normal. It would be, you know, private criminals are generally recognized as such by other people. People who, you know, rapists and thugs and robbers, unless they have a badge or they have a uniform, they're usually recognized by everybody as thugs, and that's as guilty criminals. And that's, I think that's not part of the problem. The problem is general recognition that, you know, someone who is a thug isn't because he's wearing a funny hat. That's what I think is the problem. And of course, I do recognize private crime, and we do recognize that this is wrong. But maybe the tide is turning, and some private crime is now being accepted under the guise of, you know, so-and-so offended me. That's a, kind of a big topic, right?
Yeah, lots of fodder for thought.
Well, should keep talking about that. Use your...
Yeah, when we come back.
Use your words.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow.
Freedom Fiends, we're back.
Talking about... A little bit of muscle goes a long way.
A little bit of muscle goes a long way. We've been talking about private versus public criminals here. And you know how people, I would say everybody, everybody when they are acting into evil, when they're being evil, they want to somehow justify what they're doing, the evil they're doing. I think that's true for most people who are not psychopaths. Well, even psychopaths do, but they do it through sheer reason. And we were talking about that woman who was a bus driver, right? I'm getting confused.
That's a different story.
Yeah, that's a different story. We'll get to that. But you know, calling for muscle to fight some reporter, and calling for muscle.
It's a bit flattering for whoever responds to, right? Yeah, I'm a muscle man. I'm strong. I get to show off my muscles.
You know, muscle can be good. You got to have muscle, you know. You got to have some protein and have some muscle, and it helps you move and everything. But here, muscle is just a substitute word for sheer force, a brute force. Let's break someone's nose and call it muscle. I think that's a whole deal.
Yeah, meathead.
What?
I think of it as a meathead. The guy that responded, I'm thinking, you dope. Like, you know, what are you going to do? Go in there and, like, you know... Assault the guy? Like,
I don't know. Maybe he finds himself.
This willingness to.
He finds himself.
He was so far away, he couldn't even hear. He couldn't even hear what was going on. He just responds to a call for muscle, and he's willing to like assault somebody without even knowing what happened as the lead up.
I don't know. Maybe he fancies himself a private soldier. I don't know. You know, I'm a protector.
Maybe he was hot for teacher.
Well, yeah. That would make sense. You know, it's one of the ways you can get somebody to, you know, use muscle against somebody else. Maybe it's a biological thing. You know, it's a drive for reproduction. So yeah, we're talking only biology here. So yeah. And what do you think about that? About you know, private people who would use force. And I don't know. I've always
vigilante.
Thought. Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly.
That is actually a concern for me, that if you leave justice in the hands of the public, then are they going to be reasoned about it? So another case, it's actually a case from over a year ago, but it's still waiting for a decision in it, where a woman was accusing somebody of harassing her on Twitter. It's called the Twitter case. And she sat in the courtroom while she was giving testimony and looked the judge in the eye and said, "Yeah, I believe that vigilante justice is required when the courts can't deal with this themselves." Right? So,
well, that's
that can't go well for her.
Definitely she did some offending there to the judge. So, yeah, that can go well for her. But I want to go into that because you were talking about vigilante justice and if people take law into their own hands. But surely you're not proposing the government do it.
No, I think that there needs to be an education of the population, the negative effects when you just, usually working off of gossip, make decisions about people and then decide for yourselves what the proper form of justice would be, right?
Yeah, you're right.
They need to understand the legal system and why it was put in place and, you know, the rights to a fair trial, that they have to actually think about what happens when it's you that's being accused of something. Would you like a mob showing up and deciding what your punishment would be? Or would you like a chance to sit down with, you know, and negotiate with mediators? To you discover know,
and we're trying to get some, and by that, we're trying to get some sense, to make some sense of the legal system as it is. I think it has been corrupted in many different ways by leaving it in the hands of the government. But at any rate, there is, you were talking about gossip before, and the legal term for that is hearsay, and there's a legal term for that because, you know, you cannot just go around punishing people based on what someone who wasn't there, who's not a witness, who maybe heard it from someone who was there, who heard it from someone, you know, who wasn't mm-hmm. there. You cannot just go ahead and imparting justice from that. There's a large deal of libertarian theory on this, and some of that says, you know, if you're out there punishing, you're opening yourself to being punished because, you know, you're just a regular guy. When you invest yourself mm-hmm. in some kind of immunity or qualified immunity in the case of police, or just, you know, sheer authority in the case of a judge, it becomes a different thing. And we should all be accountable. That's what I think.
Yeah.
You say that?
Yeah, well, you have to make sure that you're willing to live in the system you create.
Well, yeah. We're not designers of legal systems, but we can talk about it. We'll be right back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available And you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiend's message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Meow, 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 meow,
meow,
meow. Freedom Scenes again.
Meow, meow.
Coming back.
Meow.
Diana. Myself,
we are
Hugo.
Back.
We're back.
We were talking about responsibility and systems, yeah?
Sure, yeah.
I brought up systems at the end.
Yeah, you did.
I think what happens, like in my mind, when you remove the government, is that you have smaller societies that will formulate with their own set rules of conduct, right? I don't think that you end up with a community where everybody's just wandering around, not thinking about rules of behavior or expectations from the community on you, right? There's always going to be that. And then
it's always going
to
be roads.
There will have to be... And there would have to be some form of mediation for disputes because, you know, you don't have to be around people that long to realize that they don't agree all the time. And these disagreements can get pretty heated. So I think, like, you know, structures would be put in place and the voluntary aspect of it where, you know, you can see what kind of society this group around you wants to exist in. And then you can decide if you like their structure, and if you don't, there'll be another community, you know, creating their own structure somewhere close. You can have the freedom of movement, right?
Exactly. And what you're saying right now, it doesn't have to be necessarily tied to a specific geographic area or a town or a country. It could be, you know, just people who share the same values in any way. They can abide by certain rules and they can agree to them. And it's... you know, I don't know if you're a Christian and there's punishments and there's sins that you don't want to commit, and there's things that you want your neighbors to, you know, keep you in check, then you can do that. You can agree and let's have our own, you know, for my community, for the group of people that we share certain values, and I can agree to any kind of laws. I can disagree and leave the community, and that's okay. And, you know, people are getting upset about Sharia law. And, I think that's justified in many, 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 many cases. But just imagine if Sharia law just applied to Muslims and people who are not Muslims don't have to follow it. That's how it used to be for hundreds of years before in what is right now Turkey and the Middle East. And, well, as you said, we can just formulate our own systems. And the thing is, we don't have to be part of the same system.
Right. Well, I mean, religions are rightfully proud of their moral codes, right? They feel like they encourage morality. That's one of the biggest arguments in favor of religion, even without deciding whether a religion is right about the way the world was created or anything like that. It's kind of irrelevant. The value of religions comes in the community that they create, and some really good ideas. I mean, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right?
Sure.
There's some great morality contained within religions, which are good staple building points for a community. And
there used to be a time
you
where
you don't have to belong to it.
There used to be a time where it was not generally believed to be possible that people with different religions lived side by side. You know, it was by the Puritans, and the Quakers were living side by side, and they would have a lot of trouble. But that does not mean that people who have different religions cannot live side by side. Even there's people who belong to different denominations that have disagreements, and there will always be disagreements, as you said. There's got to be some kind of way.
Well, especially when you have like sacred sites, and then another religion claims that's their sacred site, and things like that. So
yeah, even
those would be some of the biggest arguments.
Even in interpretation, right? Even if you have the same book,
yeah.
Some people will interpret it a different way and go their own way, and I think they're, you know, completely in the right to think this is the truth or a different set of rules apply. But that's the way. We cannot just go to war over every little difference. And that's why you were saying there's got to be some kind of institution or a system in place. I don't mean the state, but there can be some systems that are different from the state. We have a lot of them. We encounter a lot of them in our daily lives.
Yeah. Well, when I mention system, it's just the reality that communities do have structure to them. People kind of require that whether you have an actual government or whether you just trust each other to be reasonable people and come up with checks and balances on individual power. Because that's another thing, too. You get people with charisma who can just get up on a podium and then all of a sudden find themselves in control of a bunch of minds. They're just like, oh, this guy, that's the person with the, that I want to follow. And then they lose their ability to recognize when something they say, because not everybody has great ideas all the time, right? And some of these charismatic people are toxic leaders. But it just comes down to degrees of control that you allow the people who there will always be leaders in society, just as there's people who are followers. There's nothing wrong with being a follower. There's different styles of leadership and different styles of followership, which I think if people learn more about that would really help in terms of structuring a more friendly society to people's liberty and ability to express themselves and enjoy life fully.
I've given some thought to that, and I think, even though you'd like to be a leader, and you're a leader probably in at least one thing or one group in your life, you cannot be a leader in everything. So you pretty much have to pick a couple of things, be a leader in those, and be a follower in everything else if you have more than one interest, And it's very important to
Being a leader is really hard work, actually, because you end up taking on you take on responsibility for the people who follow your idea. I mean, I'm hesitant sometimes, even just to recommend somebody for a job, because if they don't mesh with the employer, or if they, something comes up in their life and they don't do their job well, I kind of feel like it was my fault for recommending them, right? And if you're a leader of a community, and then that community, every time something happens, looks to you to solve the problem, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot more power, I think, in being a follower.
Yeah, that's
to some degree.
Some of the things we talk about the market relate to that, right? If you're the one consuming the ideas in this case or the products, you get to decide if they happen at all. Because you need numbers, and the leader actually needs numbers, and that's what he's trying to get, or he or she is trying to get. I refuse to use the word they for that. He or she is trying to get, and they need to get the numbers, so they have to at least tweak the message a little bit here and there to try to get the numbers. Otherwise, the followers are really the ones who decide what gets done and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this reminded me of something I was thinking about the last few days: unions, right? Because a union is a group that forms for the worker, right, to protect them from abuses from people higher in the hierarchy, right? And I don't know, there's a lot of people really split on the value of unions and whether or not they end up actually performing the function they were formed to do, because usually they just end up becoming their own hierarchy, and it becomes about the survival of the union at the sacrifice of the interests of the workers.
Yeah, the workers, and
see where I'm getting?
Yeah. I see where you're getting. But also the thing is that I think a union is usually a coercive, in a way, a kind of institution, because you cannot just not be in the union. That's one, and the employer cannot just go around hiring people from that do not belong to the union. And that's, I think, that would be the fate of a coercive institution. If it were a voluntary one, a union could be sort of like a club and not like a guild, where the king or the law specifies that you have to do the work. People have to hire you instead of everybody else. People have to pay workers what you determine instead of, what is agreed upon by the worker and the business and the employer. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with unions, and is that leaders in the unions are generally considered to be, Well, politicians, you can see that if you have ever watched this dramas about politicians, the union leaders are right there talking stuff over in their offices, right?
Yeah. And well, they're really strong unions.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong unions. They implement the seniority policies so that the longer you've been in the union, then like you can bump somebody from a job if you decide that you want their position if you have seniority, right? And people, when they first join, have no access to the work at all. They just have to do day calls and fill in wherever, you know, somebody else decided to take a day off or something. And it's really difficult to have stable employment when you first get in. And the seniority people they usually act like bullies, you know, in terms of not sharing work or, you know, dominating the, you know, the workforce in some way. I don't know. Have you had experience with unions?
Well, just secondhand, you know, because there's not that many unions at all, except for public unions, even here in Mexico, which is a bit more socialistic than the U.S. in many respects, or Canada for that matter, in many respects, in many industries. But, you know, the industries that used to have a public, they used to have unions, the private industry is usually, they're usually dead. And whatever's left is just public unions. I remember that I have a family member of mine was a manager in a public enterprise, and this union leader was there, and he was giving the company a lot of trouble. What they did, well, he had him transferred into his under his management, and he said, you know, your job is just to sit there and spend a day there, you know, listening to whatever's going on, and they wanted him to resign, and finally they could do it. But, you know, there was some arm wrestling there, just giving him a very, very lousy thing to do so that he would, you know, eventually quit. And he asked for triple the severance payment, for triple the severance package, and he got it because, you know, they were really sick of him. So that's my only experience with unions. I don't know if you had any experience with unions
at all.
Yeah,
well, I was in a couple of film unions. And one of them was a low budget one, and it was pretty open. So any employer that was staffing, was crewing a show, anybody could go and interview, and then just get it on the merit of your interview. But in the bigger union, people who wanted to hire me were not allowed to.
Yeah,
they were blocked by other people in the union.
That hurts the industry, right? Let's see more about that. Market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help The Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Meow, 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 meow.
Meow, 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 meow. The Fiends are back. Diana, you there?
I'm here.
We're coming back from the market. We love going to the market, you know? It's just voluntary interactions, generally no unions. And, yeah.
Free marketplace of ideas.
Yeah. And of things when we go to the market. You know, you get things you probably should know about and maybe want to buy them.
Well,
that's the deal with it.
One of the things with that I found with the unions, the bigger film union, if you had something you needed to use that, you know, you had to plug in, you couldn't, you know, you couldn't plug something in because that became somebody else's job. Like, so the film sets were really, really slow on the bigger budget one things because everybody had their lines, right? Like, say I was doing makeup and then something got into the hairline. Well, got to stop working because now that's the hair person's job, right?
Oh, my God.
And it's kind of insane that way. And the stronger the union is, the more it seems to disable friendly working conditions. And
everybody's
the more
just
miserable
trying
the people
to find
seem
out,
to be.
Yeah, everybody's just trying to find out if it's my job or somebody else's, right?
Yeah, and it gets into, it seems to be a mentality of trying to get paid the most amount of money for the least amount of work, which is, I really think that whatever job you're doing, you have to take some sort of a joy and pride in it. And that just seems to get cut off. Like another big union in Canada is the postal union, right?
Everywhere.
If somebody
everywhere
works for postal
too.
Services. Yeah. If somebody works for postal services, you're thinking, oh, wow, you got it made. You know, you get paid a ton of money per hour for a job that would probably pay less than half of that if it wasn't unionized. And they get really strict days off and benefits and all this other stuff. But my Lord, are they ever miserable? Like,
yeah,
and seriously,
I'm pretty sure
their jobs.
They are. Yeah, and you know, that's why they go postal everywhere, or at least in the US they do sometimes. And yeah, you know, it's the same. People in particularly in public unions, they have I have some friends who work for the government, and they all say that, you know, they're getting good money, they're getting good benefits, but most of them really hate their jobs after a while, because you know, the result is you cannot take a lot of pride in something where the result is not really up to you. You know, it's everyone's just trying to do something for the end result. And if there's some kind of, you know, how you were saying before, if you were doing makeup and something got tangled in the hairdo, and you know, it's gotta be the hair person. And if probably they need the electrician to plug in the hair dryer, right?
Yeah, we can actually plug it in and stuff like
okay.
That was like, I don't know, there's cables and cords, and so I can't remember specific examples, but yeah, like the hooking up the power source, right? So say we needed to use an outlet and somebody unplugged it back where it was connected to the generator or something like that. If it was something really simple that anybody could actually do to fix it, nope, not allowed to touch it.
Oh, that's
so
I don't
stuck
know if you've
there
heard
at an
this
outlet waiting for somebody to, yeah.
You know, bow tie economists.
That's just kind of a random example.
No, yeah, and there's lots of them. The bow tie economists have one, which is very funny for me. Is long after coal trains were retired, and after that industry no longer relied on coal, even electric trains or diesel trains used to be forced to have a fireman. Or yeah, a firefighter next to the heater. I don't know how they call it on the front on the train, because it was required by regulation that you should have a firefighter, even though there wasn't the possibility for fire was very low. Even, you know, similar to that of fire in a car, in a regular car. But you know, when they used to have coal, it was a very big problem. There was a mountain of coal out there. Just getting shoveled into the train machine, and you know, right. Even in the, I don't know, in the 1950s, there were these firemen that had to be hired by law, even though they were no longer necessary. I think that's one of the reasons why train travel was it's really a very low part of total travel. Now everybody travels by air, by plane. So yeah, they kill industries.
I just find it really intriguing to study human behavior in various settings. So like the question with unions is, if you look at those, like, is this an example of a worker-based structure, social structure, which then just mimics what the government does, you know?
Well,
how do people behave without the government?
If you have access to the muscle, yeah, probably then.
Yeah.
Then you can do like the government does. So this is the end of our one.
Natural hierarchy building.
Stay
behaviors
tuned.
Of humans.
Worms.
Worms.
In Survivor Max 2, School Bites, Maximus scavenged through a wasteland swarming with the undead. Desperate to find the medicine he needs, he discovers a community of survivors at his former school. Has he finally found the safe haven he's been looking for, or will he discover that school bites? Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, and read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Estos son los Freedom Fiends, transmitiendo desde el cañón iónico de baja órbita, del campo de reeducación libertario en la cima de la plaza financiera bestial, en el satélite artificial Deep Pearl 2017, en la región de Alpha Centauri. And this is Hugo from Mexico. See, that's why you're not tuning into some Tejano station, but this is Hugo with the Freedom Fiends and Diana with me. And I'd like to remind you that this show is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov, no government license, which allows reuse by everybody except for governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Diana, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. You know, I was thinking about what you said at the opening there, and it makes so much sense. Couldn't understand a word of it, but
yeah,
but it's, I did pick up on the fiends part.
It comes from the Freedom Fiends, so you know it's legit.
Totally legit.
Totally legit.
And trigger warnings included.
Yeah, sure. I didn't say trigger warning, but, you know, that goes for the whole segment.
Yeah.
Sure.
So we've been chatting about so many, you know, topics, all stemming one from the next.
Yeah.
And unions was what we were chatting about before the break. And postal unions being strong, you know, transport unions are really strong. Bus driver unions are pretty strong. And I had an experience this week on a bus where I work. Nobody really drives there after you've been going out there for a year because parking is insane and so on.
I know about that.
It's also kind of nice on the bus. It gives you a chance to read or sleep or whatever, right? You don't have to worry about traffic. You got somebody else to do that for you. But bus communities can vary in tone, right? So if you go on like one of the busier lines, then you're pretty much just like you feel like an animal on there because everybody's just like shoved together. Bus is completely packed. We stop somewhere and more people somehow manage to squeeze on. And
yeah.
And it's not very civilized, right? And it kind of sets the tone for your day.
We get a lot of that here in Mexico City too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I switched bus lines and the one I go to now is very civilized. It's got a nice kind of sedate tone to it. But we had this new bus driver, and I don't know, I got this kind of feeling about her when I was getting on, maybe because her buttocks seemed a little tight or something. About halfway down the route, she stops and lets this one person on. And the guy, it was just one guy got on, and the bus was actually really, really quiet the entire trip. And this guy snarked at her about something. He didn't, he criticized her bus driving skills. I couldn't quite make out what she'd done, but, and she didn't like being criticized. So she, you know, said something, retorted back at him. And she was pretty loud voiced, actually. So I could hear her side of it pretty clear. And instead of just kind of shrugging it off and moving down, he decided to hang out in a standing position close to the bus driver's seat. And so they had an exchange back and forth, and ending with her saying, you know, I could throw you off my bus. I have the right to do that. And at which point, he didn't really say too much. I think he said a couple of words. And
probably not good for radio, right?
Yeah. At that point, she started lead footing it. So the bus is just like powering up and then like slamming on the brakes at the stops. I'm like, oh, this is not good. And, you know, keeping in mind, this is not just a bus driver and this one guy on the bus. We've got like a bus full of about 60 people, right? All trying to get to work, just minding our own business. And then we get to the next stop and she, I heard her hit a button. And this is their little security button calling for transit security to come out. And she said, this bus isn't moving until transit security gets here. So half the people start getting up and exiting the bus. I was one of them. And a few seconds later, she actually turned the bus off and said, this bus is now out of service. And I don't know exactly how she would keep the guy on the bus until security gets there. Not sure if she did, but everybody had to get off the bus, wait for the next one, and then pile a whole bus full of people onto the next one. And all of us were late for class or late for work.
That didn't go well.
No. And there was no actual physical threat to her by this person. She just didn't like being insulted by him. And so, you know, she's given this button and I think abused it because she didn't keep in mind what her job was, which was to safely transport people from point A to point B. And then I got thinking, like, you know, what could we have done differently? What could she have done differently that didn't require, like, you know, it's not the government police she's calling in, but it's the union equivalent of the police. And the disruption was, I think, disproportionate.
And yeah, sure.
What I wanted to do was, you know, get up and walk over to the guy because he intentionally was keeping himself within a position to aggravate her, like proximity to her. Just go up to him and say, "What is your damage, sir? Move to the back of the bus."
Well, you got to do something, right? And I think the problem is that people are no longer willing to do anything at all. They're deferring every conflict resolution to some form of authority. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah.
People didn't do anything, right? Up until that point. Nobody on the bus moved a finger to, you know, try to de-escalate or... Well, probably they never thought the driver would was going to stop the trip altogether.
Well, I kind of expected that she might ask him to leave the bus, you know, at the next stop. Just say, "Get off my bus. You can catch the next one." And then if he refused to get off the bus, then it would escalate to something physical, at which point it would make sense for her to call for security. But she didn't even try that.
Yeah, she threw a fit, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what it was she did. I think she changed the sign on the outside of the bus to say out of service or something like that as she was approaching the stop. And so he'd had his camera out and he was filming this. But then she's like, because she said at one point, "Well, I let you on the bus, didn't I?" And
no, thank you.
So I think she actually had done something. But, you know, there are times on the bus where people are having some sort of a conflict. And he was like, you know, "Stop bumping into me." And it's like, we're all bumping into each other. We're all, you know, crammed together. And the person decides to pick on someone personally. And other passengers will get involved in that, right? But, yeah, I'd like to imagine, how could this have possibly resolved in the, you know, in a way where the community, the bus community, who are interested in getting to work on time, could have participated in the problem resolution?
Yeah, the free bus society would have to deal with it. I think, you know, we've been disempowered at some point to take those things, which are not are really non-violent, into our own hands, just waiting for some, as I told you before, but some form of authority to come in and resolve it. I wouldn't think anyone would be able to stand up to 20 or 30 people, you know, just trying to shout them down. And I think that's nonviolent, even if, you know, if saying names or trying to get this guy or even the driver, if she gets really, you know, if she gets really confrontational, even though she's the driver, she's not just allowed to do anything on the bus. She's supposed to drive the bus safely to their destination. And that's it. So
yeah.
I don't know if people on the bus had taken those matters into their hands, so to speak, you know, nonviolently, to say, you know, you may go to the back of the bus, sit down, and we just want to move along. I wouldn't think there would have been escalation after that. What would you say? I wasn't there, so
one of the words she kept on using. One of the words she kept on using was rights. Right, it's my right to operate my bus the way I want. I have the right to throw you off, and she was bringing up rights all the time. And that's something that you know, I've noticed with all of the campus protests and all this other stuff is, you know, the current generations are heavily raised with the ideas of rights and different types of rights and the importance of them in competition with other people's rights. Because, you know, sure, the bus driver has the right to, you know, be left alone to do her job properly, right? But we have the right to have the service provided that we've bought, right? So you get into this competitions of rights and the focusing on rights, just the fact that she has the right to not be insulted, it's kind of irrelevant in the bigger picture.
Yeah, it is. Right? And, you know, it's part of the whole transaction before that trumps any idea of you know, I'm being offended, I'm getting offended right now that the driver might have. That's why I don't like to use the word right for those situations. You know, either you have a right or you don't, and that's just the terms of agreement for the service being being paid, you know? If well, you could, I guess you could say if you have if you and I agree on a price for something and on a price for something and on the delivery conditions or whatever, I have the right to make those to enforce those conditions. But I don't know, that's not what the word right is generally used or should be used for. And as you were saying, it's like a magic word, right? Becomes a magic word.
And my go-to solution where I was imagine going up saying, you know, what is your damage? That's kind of aggressive, right? And judgmental on the person.
Yes.
Where, like, you know, the ideal kind of problem resolution would be like, you know, why can't we all just get along, right?
Well, probably.
I think that
If you went there and took that position, I don't think the guy would have escalated any further. It just took one person to go forth and say something. And try to, you know, reason with that guy or with the bus driver. I would say even after that, nobody went over to the bus driver and said, you know, this is really not helping. Why don't you either get that guy off the bus, tell him to leave, or, you know, we really want to go to our destination. And that's because the
don't you find
driver,
that when people are worked up and when people are worked up and aggravated, if you say something really sappy, like, why don't we all just get along? But it actually makes them more angry.
Yeah, that happens. And
it's kind of like, you know, those people who are just too happy in the morning.
Yeah, they kind of annoy me.
Because they're just too happy.
I'm not a morning person, so I can relate to that. And, you know, the thing that impressed me is that she had a final word in that, even as some kind of a figure of authority on the bus. She had a final word on that. If she said, this bus isn't moving, and nobody even tried to convince her to do otherwise. And that's, I think that's what's going on everywhere. And I would say we should try and do something different with that. I don't know what your opinion is with that. You were there.
I did actually find it really surprising, myself included, because I didn't go up and say anything that you went through my head. You would just basically look at the situation and go, you know, shrug and go, all right, well, I guess this bus isn't moving. I got to get off it. And so everybody just quietly, very, very quietly filed off the bus.
And did you have to pay again to get on the other bus?
No, I have a pass. Or like when you get on the bus, you either have a pass or you have like a transfer thing or whatever, right?
Okay. And, so it's easier for the bus driver to just say, move to another bus. She doesn't have to do any kind of retribution or
right,
or
yeah, we just all filed through the back door.
Yeah. Well, on bus drivers and community action, freedom fiends. Let's go to the market.
Boom.
Meow.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow, meow, meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
We're back with the Freedom Fiends. And we have no panic button. Unlike bus drivers.
We have no panic
button.
We're
driving a different kind of bus.
Yeah, well, there's no panic button. We cannot resort to authority, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, I do feel for bus drivers, when you've been on a bus enough times, you see the kind of stuff they have to deal with. But, I mean, the bigger problems are when you get somebody who's drunk or physically aggressive, interfering with people, and you know, sure, you could extend to foul language and stuff like that. But you really, I think, you know, need to think in terms of how dangerous is this behavior? How threatening is it? And, you know, it's good they have a system set up with transit security. They have a button that drivers can press to quickly call for assistance. And, you know, it's a matter of protection, right? Like, you know, people that work in security usually have some sort of a phone system to check in with each other and things like that. This is worker organized utilities or things put into place in order to make their jobs safer. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's a good thing you mentioned that, because we're not just crazy saying, you know, there's no use for such a button. And I think there is, of course. And here in Mexico, a lot of there's a lot of muggings on buses, on private buses on the northern part of the city. And, well, quite often there's muggings every day on that part of the city. That's kind of the, you know, the worst part of the city. And there's been some cases where people have been shot. And by people, I mean robbers have been shot by people who are carrying weapons, which are mostly illegal here. And even though they're illegal, people are getting shot. And I would much rather prefer having a button than that kind of resolution. But at any case, in any case, it's not just talking to the driver. It's just mugging all the passengers.
Buses can be turned into moving weapons too. It's like, was that 1980s, the movie series Speed, where they hijack a bus?
I think it's from the early 90s, but yeah, they used a bus and then they did another part and they used a ship and they changed the vehicle for every different iteration of the movie. But yeah, it can be useful as a weapon.
I think it's a positive thing for people who work in an industry to identify all of their vulnerable areas where they might, you know, come into danger and things like that, and to come up with their own solutions. And, you know, this little security button or panic button doesn't have to be calling like government police and stuff. You can just have a network of, you know, coworkers who have come up with their own system of assisting each other, right?
I've read those kind of systems put in place for early warning and alarm systems, and those systems are actually more effective than confrontation for deterring crime. And I think the security cameras and alarm systems and all those things are actually more effective at deterring crime than even just putting lights in some dark alley is deterring crime. And there's a lot to be done.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that crime does exist. I mean, even with the government system in place right now, they have, I just lost my train. There's like mafia.
And, yeah, sure.
You know, underground systems, right? So, you know, you get rid of the government, you still have problems with things like the mafia, and potentially those could grow.
Yeah, those things go in Mexico, I would say that when there is a little government in some place, but there's still a big mafia, it's just the mafia trying to become the government. And they now narcos here in some cities in the country, in Mexico, not in Mexico City, but in some cities, they actually collect taxes. they say to business they just do extortions to businesses, and they call it something like what could be translated as a property tax, which is tragic but really funny for me that these narcos would be these thugs, this mafia, mafiosos would be collecting some kind of property tax. That's what they do. And I think organized crime would have to use the same tactics as with the government, because they operate really similarly.
Yeah. Well, and the existence of things like the mafia, that's part of this fear factor in getting people to open their minds up to imagining a stateless world, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, true.
You know, they think, well, without the government, the mafia would just take over, right? And
I call that a government.
Break legs and things like that.
I just call that a government. I was in Cuba some years ago. I was there traveling to visit Cuba. We can talk about that later. But yeah, I can talk about how people would instant fear on the population by saying the mafias in Mexico rule the country. We'll talk about more about that later.
Awesome.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Meow, meow, meow. Freedom fiends are back to the market. I hope you did find something good in the market for you. And we're back. This is Hugo and Diana in either end of the U.S. That's Mexico and Canada. And we were talking about the mafia and how when the mafia gets big enough, it just becomes a government. Well, that's what I said, at least. And I think, Diana, you do agree with me, right, with that?
Oh, absolutely. It's a mini government that's always kind of existing.
I don't know. It's just the egg for a government.
Lower levels.
It's a government
hiding
egg.
Behind the curtains.
Yeah, sure. And I was talking about how governments will use the mafia as some kind of illustration, just to make people scared, make people afraid of their the chaos that would be there if it weren't for us, your rulers, your just rulers. And I was talking about how I went to Cuba, and until recently, well, you could go to Cuba. Are you a Canadian national, Diana?
Yeah.
You could go to Cuba, right? If you wanted to.
Yeah.
And so could I. So
yeah, it's not banned.
I think people in the U.S. can now travel to Cuba. And I would think that's a very good exercise to see how some of the socialistic policies end up. You know, Michael Moore famously did this movie called Sicko, and he was painting the Cuban system as a good thing. And it's not.
A boat full of people down for medical treatment.
Yeah, of course. If you prearrange that with the government, do a propaganda, piece. Sure, they'll they'll give you medical attention. And I went there, and whenever I would mention I was coming in from Mexico, Cubans will tell me, "Oh yeah, Mexico. They're practically ruled by the mafia there," and because that's what they're getting from the Cuban government, which is a really repressive, socialistic, criminal regime, which it is. We're not here to say anything else. They are a very horrible government, but the point is, they would instinct fear in the population. Say, you know, if we do not rule you like we do, then if we give you more capitalism, then mafias will take over, just the way they do in Mexico. I was trying to show them that it's not the case. You can have more freedom, but it was a hard thing to do. Yeah.
I can't really say it feels like I know anything about Cuba. I haven't really, all I've really heard is the propaganda about it, you know, from various different sides. So Cuba's evil. Oh, Cuba's a paradise, you know. And then you just kind of are stuck with the middle point of view is I know nothing about Cuba.
Yeah. If you can tell the word of a fellow fiend, Cuba is a horrible place in many ways. The people, it's like everywhere else. The people are really decent there, and the government is really horrible there, even compared to any standards. So, yeah, that's, you get the same kind of propaganda.
I think you really need to spend time somewhere to get any real sense of what it's like, because everywhere they have their like tourist sections where they have, you know, the part of their country or their city that they want everybody to see when they first arrive. And then they, you know, figure that people won't stick around for much longer to get to, you know, what's underneath it.
Yeah, and they have that there, the hotels and the beaches, and there's a lot of prostitution there. People do sex tourism there, going to Cuba to do that. So yeah, they get a very very a very slanted way of impression of how Cuba
is demonizing countries that, like, you know, so for capitalists, they will demonize socialist countries. For socialists, they'll demonize capitalist countries. Anything that has any sort of bend to it in the opposite direction of where you think you're headed, then you're going to say, well, it's important to continue in this, you know, right direction or left direction or whatever. Because if you don't, you're going to end up like this demonized country over there.
Sure, right? Sure. And that's a big technique in propaganda, right? You just pick somewhere where people don't really have an idea how it is and just say, you know, if we continue like this, we'll end up like that country. And I found the difference between the Cuban government and the Mexican government, for instance, which is much more liberty-minded compared to the one in Cuba, of course, more capitalistic. There's a lot more freedoms here. I found it to just be a matter of degree. So it's not a matter of socialism or capitalism, because there's really no capitalist government. There's just, you know, corporatist governments. If capitalism is just free markets, then there's no capitalist government because it's a government. So you cannot not really talk right. about free exchange in your relationship with the government. So I found it just to be a difference in degree of more state, yeah. less state, and that's pretty much it, just taking out all the propaganda about socialism and capitalism.
If you reach a point where you can actually have a stateless society, because people have the framework that they're confident with and they have the tools for problem resolution and all this other stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds really silly the way I've stated it. But if you get to a point where you can actually have a stateless society, those same principles that allowed for that will, I think, help dealing with things like mafia.
Sure, sure, yes. Because there would be a principle of not letting any group rule you in some way, and people would say, you know, eternal vigilance would be needed. And I would say it's not the case. It depends on the opinion of the generality of the populace. Slavery has never come back, at least in the West. And
well, some people would argue about that.
Yeah, but I mean the usual, the old
what,
kind
what
of
they're calling slavery isn't the same thing.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. So. People would abhor slavery right now. So there's really no need for eternal vigilance against slavery. Just everybody thinks it's bad. Everybody recognizes it for the evil that it is. I think that will happen with the state in at some point. I don't know if within our lives, within our lifetimes, Diana, but I think that will happen. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think that without states there to reinforce, you know, rights of ownership of one person over another and stuff, it really what it comes down to is agreements between people, right? And you know, that's the thing with some of the so-called modern slavery, say like sex trafficking, right? Some of these women have chosen to you know, they think it's better to leave their country and take on conditions that they're fairly aware of when they go in. You know, if somebody takes a job working for 50 cents an hour, you know, I guess you could argue if they've agreed to take that job or not, because maybe nothing else was available, right?
Yeah.
And they might have other reasons why they thought it would, you know, get them into a better position ultimately or something. But, you know, the essentially does break down to agreements. I mean, outside of, well, one of the things with slavery, if a slave escaped, then, you know, the government would reinforce the right for the person to go and get them back, right?
Yeah, that's and, some kind of private property that we do not agree with, right? And if you have the government, right. They get to decide what's private property and what isn't. And, you know, there used to be a time where owning people was enforced by the state. So there's, I don't know, there's yeah. really, well, I see the future future is good, but we're going to have to take a long time to get there.
Yeah. On the types of arrangements that people come up with, I'm sure some of what I just said about slavery and stuff would just, like, you know, enrage some people.
I'm sure.
So wrongheaded, and they don't choose this or they don't choose that. But, you know, what's going on in my head with those comments is that, you know, in working towards a stateless society, you're also working towards a society in which people understand their ability to make choices and, you know, how to form networks of like-minded people. Without concerning yourself whether or not everybody in the whole world agrees with the same thing, right? If you have freedom of movement and no borders, things like that, then the ability for people to voluntarily choose their associations with other people becomes the primary basis of each society.
Yeah, if some people, I'm pretty sure some people will disagree with this too, but, you know, there's no human trafficking where there's no borders. There's just people moving.
Yep.
You don't need the coyote to walk you over to do contraband with you into the country. You just walk through the border and that's it, and maybe become, I don't know, some kind, choose your line of work and try to get employed.
Well, of course, this is one of the things people say to anarchists too. Well, if you don't like living in a society with a state, then just leave.
Where? Leave where?
Well, and it's not so easy to get travel visas and where are you going to go? That's exactly right. They're all the same thing. So why not fight it where you are as opposed to going
leave the planet.
Else? But even if you wanted to leave, you know, it's a world full of borders and very, very difficult to get through those borders in some instances.
And some people claim ownership of the land on the other side. So, you know, it's really hard. So that's what we try to... win some minds to the idea that we can work things ourselves, which is the whole thing with anarchy. You know, it's not no order, no. Even some people would say it's no government. It's just voluntary government. I don't like that phrase, but people use it sometimes. You know, it's a voluntary order or voluntary agreements, like you were saying before, and. You were talking before about slavery.
Well, there would be social structures in the majority of places.
I'm pretty sure.
Certainly there might be some societies in which everybody just kind of meanders around doing whatever they feel like at the time, right? But in most societies, you're going to have an agreement to function by a work clock. And, you know, in order to conduct business with each other, you kind of have to set up some sort of framework so that people can work together and arrange... you know, meetings and transfer goods from one person to another and so on. Like, you're going to have some kind of structure, which, you know, people could call a government, but, you're not talking about the same type of thing. It's the voluntarism, right?
Yeah, sure.
But I imagine there would be, from one community to the next, like right next to each other, you could find drastically different societies.
Yeah, I'm
with
sure.
Similar moral codes. Or drastically different moral codes in terms of how they are going to go about. I think the concept of rights would survive, that people would build up their social structures based around an agreement on what sort of rights the people in that community should have and how they would be exercised. And of course, I almost said how they would be enforced, right?
Yeah, but that's just, you know... That's just habit, thinking that they will have to be enforced by force, of course. They could be, you know...
Well, they do have to be enforced in some way, but it's just a difference of what the word enforced brings to mind, right?
Yeah, maybe
so
it's just a matter of...
they'd be enforced by social ostracizing if people don't, you know, respect your rights.
Sure, yeah. I'd like to live in that telecommuting society, if there is one. Just let me know about it, so I can just stay home and yap about things.
That'd be awesome.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
And we are back. The redemption in the third act. We need a little bit of muscle over here. You know what? Maybe we don't. Maybe we don't need a little muscle in here. Maybe we need a little bit more creative thinking on how to resolve problems.
I think we do. And I think we're, you know, I think we're especially suited for that. We human beings. There's a lot of animals who could just, you know, maul us to death, and yet they're not the dominant species in the planet. We have this unique ability of talking things over and finding creative solutions and new solutions and inventing things and inventing systems that we should be able to use, right?
The human being is vastly underestimated in terms of, I think, our nature and our ability to get along with each other. I mean, sure, not everybody's going to get along, and sometimes there's good reasons for disagreement, and sometimes it's just, you just don't like someone, right? And you see that all over the place, and you see, you know, various types of conflicts going on, but it doesn't mean that those conflicts will take over all of society without a government. You know, the ability for people to resolve their conflicts, I think, is actually predominant. And it's almost like, you can have 10 great things happen to you in a day and one bad thing. And at the end of the day, you just end up thinking about that one bad thing so intensely and you forget about all the good stuff.
Yeah, sure. And that,
like,
that's
true of society too.
Sure. And you know, people who would not believe in this, they would imagine every single conflict about something really stupid. You step on my toe, whatever happens between two people, to escalate into war. And that's not... Mm-hmm. I'm ridiculing it on purpose, just to make sure that we get... That's not what's going to happen. We can, you know, there comes a point where the price of your stupidity becomes too high, and it takes really takes a government to go ahead and wage war. We go into confrontation up to a point where it's, you know, no longer profitable, and then we have to find out
and,
some solution.
When you disagree with stuff, you know, you see protests when people don't, you know, like what the establishment is doing. But I think ultimately, you really just feel like you're one number in a massive, you know, of billions of people. You're just one of them, and what power do I have? And protests can sometimes make changes, but I think most people, just like the people on the bus, are just end up being, you know, apathetic, and they just kind of think, well, you know, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to get up and get off the bus now.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody will figure that out, and it's that's what they are thinking probably. And the message would be, no, you got to figure it out yourself. Nobody's going to figure it out if you don't start. And that's the message of the Fiends for today, I would say. Yeah.
Well, and also you get off the bus because you just think, well, another bus is going to come along. I know this system, right? It's like, yes, but we could have actually kept this bus in motion if we'd been a little more creative.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And, we cannot solve the whole world. We cannot fix the whole world, but we can fix things around us in our immediate vicinity. And you were saying, I'm just one person. And yes, you're just one person, but you can fix things around you, even though, you know, you get on the news, you listen to the news and it's all bad news and it's all complicated things that you have no idea how to solve. The good news is you don't have to solve them. You just have to solve the things around you. The bus that... the boss that got stopped by some guy just saying things to the driver, that thing you can solve. You cannot solve the Middle East, of course, but you can solve that.
Well, that's why I think communities like, you know, Freedom Fiends and their audience and, you know, other groups, the smaller communities, that's where you're not just one out of a billion people. That's where you actually have a chance to explore ideas and feel like you're being heard and contributing to the society in some way, intellectually and for some people spiritually, right? That people need to have that sense of meaning and that connection. And the bigger the group, the bigger the society, the less that connection happens for people. So it's small communities like ours that really make a difference.
And we can do that even across the distance, Diana. And also,
I know.
Also with everyone.
Between Mexico and Canada.
Yeah, and everybody who's listening right now, they can do it even though we're not in the same town. That's the marvel of the modern world. You can try that.
Be free right here, right now, and fix your things. Do your things. Nobody's going to do them for you.
Find your starting point and then just go.
Sure. Yeah, we can all do that. Don't feel powerless. Feel powerful. The fiends empower you too. And I say worms to that.
Great doing a show with you, Hugo.
Great doing a show with you. Goodbye, everybody. Worms.
Worms.
Across the world. Meow.